I'll be too nervous to. I'll probably lost for words.
Hello and welcome to a special edition of the Lost for Words betting podcast. I'm joined, as ever, by my co-host Bradley Todd. Brad, hello.
Good evening, Tom. Are you excited?
I am. I'm excited. I was more excited when my headline pick didn't shit the bed over the weekend, but we'll come on to that a little bit later. It certainly put a little bit of a spanner in my mind. I'm still sticking with it, purely based on the confidence I've got in the other sort of remaining selections that I feel like there's just, you know, a chance to carry on. But it's a really unique test, isn't it? You know, not everyone will say that about Augusta in general, but actually picking a major, you know, bet is just a unique thing in the sense of not only is it, because it's the first of the year. Like, once you get to kind of like the US Open and the Open, you can go, right, okay, well, we've seen how they've performed at the Masters and the PGA this year when his chips have been down and all that sort of stuff. And that's not to say, look, it's easy to pick a PGA or an Open winner, but it makes sense. You've had a bit more of the season as well. This year, Brad, in particular, it's felt like, not apart from Scotty Scheffler, no one on the PGA Tour, at least, has really staked their claim for this, unless, of course, you consider someone like Wyndham Clark, who's won and played so well, I guess.
Yeah, I suppose so. But then again, he's a debutant, so, and we all know that experience and course history, especially around Augusta, let alone majors, is so important. But then again, he's got that major in the bank now, you know, so I suppose you could just say why not, but I do think he's a little bit short. But yeah, I agree, like he's the one, I suppose, bar Scheffler. I suppose Xander has been playing ever so well as well, but yeah, it's so tough, isn't it? It is tough. You just gotta, you know, do the best you can do research wise and just have a good punt off the back of all that we know.
The good thing is you're always going to enjoy the Masters, I think. Like, it's always going to be an enjoyable event. So unlike the Valero Texas Open last week, where we were quite, in the end, we thought we were quite close, but you were with Matsuyama and Noren had a chance going into Sunday to place. Once that's kind of letting you down, you're not that excited about the Valero Texas Open. But regardless of what happens at the Masters,
you're going to enjoy it. Your attention just flips.
And I think it's just one of those, like, Rory McIlroy, first top 10 of the year on the PGA Tour, at least. Obviously, a lot of people will discount the fact that he, you know, finished second and first in his first two DP World Tour events of the year, which you can't ignore. But I just, like, that is just one of those pauses for concern with, like, even if the second best player in the world, you know, in terms of rankings, can't even post a top 10 this season, you're thinking, what is going on the PGA Tour? And as we said, Xander and Wyndham playing so well. I think with the debutant thing, everyone knows this. Everyone knows that Fuzzy Zeller was the last debutant to win. And actually, when you look at it, there's only been three debutant winners, and two of them were the first two winners of the Masters. So it's essentially irrelevant. But it's also interesting that Jonas Blix, I always use Jonas Blix as an example, finished runner-up in his first major, his first Masters start, and then Zalatoris, Sungjae Im, Jordan Spieth and Jason Day have all threatened to win it on debut as well since 2011. So there's been plenty of opportunity, right, for a winner to kind of break the trend. And any one of those number of people could do it. But, like, even in Jonas Blix's case, which is, you know, you think, oh, that's a bit of a random one. When you actually look at it, he'd finished 26th and 4th in his first two major starts the year before. So he finished 26th at the Open, 4th at the PGA, and then went and finished 2nd at the Masters. And he'd already won twice on the PGA Tour. So as random as it would have been, like, it's almost a very similar case that Wyndham Clark makes, right? So in that sense, you would say, you'd have to say, look, Wyndham Clark profiles is a very good, you know, you don't get many debutants that have already won a major. You don't get many debutants like Ludvig Åberg. But I think particularly in Åberg's case, and again, you'll hear this a million times this week, but it's not only his first Masters, his first major. And I just, you know, if he comes out and does that in his first major, then so be it, right? It would be incredible. But
there's so many obstacles to overcome. You've got to overcome the course angle. You've got to overcome the pressure of playing in a major for the first time. You've got to overcome trying to beat everyone.
The whole experience of the Masters, right? Yeah. It's just so different. It's different to the other majors as well. It's just, it's a unique experience. So, yeah, I think you've got to handle that.
The one trend, I guess, that you sort of see, so basically everyone that had won over the last sort of 10 years or so had been inside the top 25 in the world. Hideki Matsuyama was the highest ranked winner at 25th, Patrick Reed 24th, lowest ranked, I guess. But that's going to be skewed a bit this year, Brad. Like if a live person wins, you know, the 300th best player in the world could win and it doesn't really mean anything. So that would be one I'd be slightly wary of. I guess John Rahm is the type that could, you know, fall in that elite list of Jack Nicklaus, Nick Faldo and Tiger Woods as back-to-back Masters winners. But again, it's so difficult.
It's so hard, yeah. It doesn't appeal to me. As we've seen over the years, it's really tough to defend. And plus, he's been heavily distracted with Liv and everything else. So I don't know. I find it very hard to get on board with John Rahm this week.
Especially when it's his first since moving to live, right? Like, I don't know how he's going to be well received. Like, everything that kind of Rory said since he's moved over there, you probably think he's going to be fine. And, you know, he's got a lot of players in the champions group and stuff like that. Like, it's not going to be as difficult, I don't think, as it probably be made out. But just purely trying to back-to-back it is so hard. I mean, actually, a couple of my picks, as I'll come on to later, one of the reasons I like them so much is how well they've performed since they've won here, and I think that's pretty admirable. So I guess without further ado, Brad, let's go into the Masters from a betting perspective. What were the key elements you looked at, other than value, other than just players that you like? What were the key elements you looked for in a pick this week?
I think, as I've already mentioned, I think experience in course history is massive around here. As we know, it's like a second shot golf course. So I think irons, you know, approach play is really important. Like, there's such an emphasis on second shots. As we know, like it's just a really hard course to work out, and you've got to have a lot of patience. So sort of showing up on courses that sort of require a lot of thinking, you know, just having that sort of nous to play the sort of complex shots when needed. And yeah, the power of the tee, you cannot deny that it's a massive advantage around here, the fairways being so wide, ability to hit the high ball flight. There's so much, but I suppose just course management, course history. And the most important, I think, is just form coming into it. You know, it's so hard to just show up in poor form because you're going to need every club in your bag. So I think just a good solid game, tee to green. And they're the sort of things I was looking at just off the top of my head.
Yeah, I think one of the most important things that you mentioned there was the patience, right? And I sort of piggybacked off of a tweet last week where Rory McIlroy was talking about, you know, just not being quite as aggressive and having to be a bit more patient here than he has been in the past. And, you know, that's certainly the case. And as I pointed out in that tweet, I don't know if you saw it, Brad, but like, he's only broken 70 twice in round one at the Masters, 2011, which we all know what happened there. He shot final on 80 to lose it. And look, I completely forgive him that. He hadn't even won a major at that point, and his best chance of having the Masters was then. You know, more of a naive player at that point. But the other time was when he shot 69 and was in the mix with Patrick Reed in 2018. And they're the only two times he had a chance to win. It's literally as simple as that. And you look at the path to victory stat on Tour Tips over the last 5 years. John Rahm led after round one. He was in second after second and third round, but he then went on to win. Scheffler third after round one, led after rounds two and three, and then won. Hideki second after round one, sixth after round two, first after round three. Dustin Johnson wire to wire, Tiger Woods 11th after round one, 6th after round two, 2nd after round three, really grow into the event. You have to be there after day one. Like, it's as simple as that. You might do what Rory's done here so many times in the past and have a really good weekend and, you know, fly your way back into kind of top five, top six, which would be great for some of these people you're betting each way, right? But from a purely winning perspective, they have to get off to a fast start. And I think that's key. And I think that I
really do think the reason Rory just struggles with it so much is just the pressure he puts himself on a Wednesday night. He probably goes to bed racking his brain, thinking he's in a 68 on day one to keep himself in the mix, and just can't do it. And you know, it's wild. I think for me, like, it's just so key to just. He literally said the perfect thing. He was like, if you aim for a 70, you might shoot a 68. If you aim for a 66, you can shoot a 75. Like, so he knows that and still can't apply it to his game. That's what I find really weird around Augusta. And look, I think he could end his career in a very similar sort of way to how Sergio did it, where it took him so many years, like 19 attempts or 18 attempts, whatever it was, before entering here, and then does it and then sort of struggles after that. It's a really interesting factor with Rory himself.
You've hit the nail on the head though. Like, he just puts so much pressure on himself because obviously it's the last one he needs. But I actually was the closest I've come to backing him this year. Yeah, because I think that last week when he ranked third on approach, he gained nearly two strokes. He gained strokes across the board. So yeah, he looks much improved. He still looks a bit off, like on eye. But yeah, I considered him. Like, he is going to win this one day. He's got the game for it. As I said earlier, the high ball flight is so important. There's no one that does it better than him. You just stop it on the firm greens. And yeah, the one thing that what you said that just worries me the most is that he just puts so much pressure on himself. And I think that does derail him each year. I was close, Tom. I was close to backing him.
I can't even pretend I was close to backing him. I was nowhere near. Like, I think for me, like, I do understand why people say, and what you just said there, like, he's, you know, inevitably going to win one. He's got the perfect game for it, because he has. Like, he's got the perfect. He hits it long and straight. He is great around the greens on his day. He can get a streaky putting. His irons are obviously amongst the best in the world. It's just the intangibles of patience and aggressiveness where I was talking to Matt about this the other day on the podcast, and if people haven't listened to that, and I'll just repeat it, but like, I wonder what would happen, and I think he should do it one year just to say he's done it. And I think that for 90% of his career, Rory has made the right decision in picking a yes man caddy, because I think he needs to feel freed up and, you know, in the knowledge that he makes all the decisions and he lives and dies by them, right? But I think for just once a year, even, not even for the four majors a year, if he was just to, not, you know, it doesn't have to be this one person, but let's just sort of say he went to Stevie Williams for one Masters just to see what he would tell him. And Stevie Williams would fucking love it, by the way, because he'd be like, oh yeah, you know, I won another Masters. I did everything that no one else could do with Rory, etc. But like, there's, you know, with all the respect in the world to Harry Diamond, I don't think there's anything he can do to increase Rory's chances of winning a Masters, right? I think he frees him up to play what he's done over the last X amount of years. He allows him to do that. He obviously helps him mentally in certain aspects, but he just needs, like, we heard it for so long, Brad. I mean, Justin Thomas has just sacked Bones a couple of weeks before the Masters. But he would have helped Mickelson win one. Like, Ted Scott would definitely have helped Scheffler after he's just guided
100%.
Like, I don't necessarily buy into the caddy thing too much, you know, 7 or 8 times out of 10 of the year, because I think that talent overall does the job. But there's so many nuances to this golf course where, like, Rory will just attack a pin that he shouldn't, or just aim for the wrong part of, you know, the fairway or whatever. And that could just be all it needs.
Again, course management, isn't it? Yeah. It's just course management.
And look, you know, if you play it 20 times, you figure it out for yourself, probably. And that might be what ends up happening with Rory McIlroy. But, you know, I guess the one thing with him is that he comes into this every single year as one of the top three favourites, right? And that comes with so much pressure. So really interested to see how he does, as I am with Scheffler. Obviously, Scheffler is, we talk about people not being staking their claim. He's the one, obviously, that's put himself out there.
Yeah, and I think you can't really go against anyone if they're just like, yep, single dart on Scheffler this week. Fair enough. If you want to do that, that's absolutely fine. Like, because you can't really say a bad word really on his game, on his skill set around Augusta. Like, it is just, he is the man. He is the man to beat. So I just don't. What's the fun in that, though? Like, I love cheering against. I'd rather cheer against him. it's not for me. But I don't begrudge anyone, you know, that does want to play it that way.
Remind me, Brad, were you on John Rahm as well last year?
I wasn't. No, I wasn't.
No. Okay. So we were, as a whole, as a podcast, we were on him because obviously I picked him for last year. Yeah. And look, I thought it was one of the most obvious decisions I've ever made. Like, he was 10-1. He'd won three times that year. He'd won a couple of times at the end of 2022. He was just in fantastic form. When you look at the last five majors, even when everyone considers Tiger Woods such a shock, he was 16-1. DJ was 9-1. Hideki was 45-1. Scottie Scheffler was 16-1. John Rahm was 9-1. It's pretty clear where we need to focus our attention, right? Like, this top of the board, right down to kind of 20-1, is probably where you need to aim, at least with one of your selections. So whilst the temptation might be to take a bunch of players at, you know, 28-1 and bigger, I can see why we've focused our attention to here. So I'll let you lead off with your number one pick, and then I'll follow it.
Yep. So I've gone with Xander Schauffele from the top because I just couldn't get away from it. He is becoming a bit of a regular for me at Augusta. Like, I'm worried I might be falling into the trap again, but everything is pointing me towards him. He's just been absolutely rock solid this year. Six top 10 finishes from 8 events. That's incredible. And that also includes the runner-up finish at the Players, which he should have won. I suppose that's what puts most people off Xander, though, is his ability to get over the line. And I do understand that. But the major win, I feel, will come. Like, he is too good in my eyes to not win one. Obviously, he's come close a few times. And I can't see why it can't be this week. And he loves Augusta. He was runner-up on his second visit behind Tiger Woods. He came third in 2021, which was his best chance to win it. We were talking about it earlier. He dropped shots early on into his round, then rallied down the back nine and was just a shot behind Decky going on to 16. And he dunked it in the water. I think he made triple bogey and that was it. I don't know if there will be much scar tissue. It was more Decky's to lose than his, but he did miss the cut the year after, so maybe there was. That was the only cut that he has missed from six starts at Augusta. And I just feel like he ticks every box from a statistical standpoint. He's such an all-rounder. And as I said earlier, like, you need to be around here. You're going to have to use every club in the bag at a really high level. Bar Scottie Scheffler, I think, you know, he is the most informed player in the world right now. And he looks the best value up the top for me, and I think it's time he won a major.
We were talking about this with Xander, right, of just how impressive he's been. This was obviously all off air, you know, sort of discussing before we come on. And look, he was one back going into the weekend in 2019, five back going into the final round because Molinari had played so well, and then he closed the gap again to within one to finish second behind Tiger, who bogeyed the last, so essentially within two, right? But the difference with Xander is he'd made up that five-shot deficit and done everything he could, and it was all down to kind of what the remaining players did on the course, right? So the fact that he, you know, slow start, open with a 73, and this is what I point out to you, Brad, at the start of the show, like,
it's just costly,
you can't get off to a slow start. He even literally shoots 70 or 71. If he just shoots level par, he's in a playoff. So
he did the opposite last year. He shot 68, then went backwards.
But like, when you look at it, that second he was in, like, almost all the time, right? Like, he's had a couple of rounds where he's within sort of four or five shots of the lead. Even on his debut, he opened up with 71, was within five of the lead, and then just rapidly went backwards. But 2019, he was within five for the last three rounds. But in 2020, he was within five for the first two rounds. 2021, he was within five in the last three rounds. Last year, within three after round one. Like, it's such an impressive, like, of his last 10 rounds here, or even going back further now, if you go last 14 rounds here, he's only shot over par four times, and two of those were in his miscut in 2022. So he's got the rock solid thing. As I said to you earlier, and it comes down to, I won't give away the second pick of mine, but like, when we sort of compared the two, it was I thought that Xander is probably the better place bet, and I think this other guy has got the higher win equity, and I think that's purely based on you talk about his ability to get over line. He's almost got an ability to lose. He just has this weird like ability to just chuck something.
Yeah, and you trust the other. I agreed with you when you said that as well. So
I think from if you were just looking for each way value, I think Xander is the one. And then it's a hope that talent just takes over at some point. And
that's the hope.
Like he's that good, isn't he? Here's the pick that I was delighted about on Saturday and then started scratching my head yesterday, which I can't really afford to do. Brooks Koepka. I was so, so adamant that Koepka was going to win this on Saturday. And then he shoots 77-77 at Doral after opening with a 68 and sitting eighth after round one.
Horrible.
I just in the end decided that I couldn't let a couple of rounds on Liv put me off. People don't want to put too much emphasis on it in terms of credit, right, on Liv, but I feel like if I was to then put too much emphasis on it from a negative standpoint, it would kind of directly contradict that point. So I think he's just served the apprenticeship, right? Like you look at Hideki and John Rahm, I think Hideki and Dustin Johnson, they both played 9 Masters before winning, so they both won on their 10th start. John Rahm won on his 8th start. Brooks Koepka's made 8 starts, 2 of them when he was basically injured in 2021 and 2022 when he missed the cut.
Mm-hmm.
And what I was really keen to point out, and I did this on the show on Saturday, the best, maybe we talk about the Masters that never were. We had Dustin Johnson falling down the stairs, didn't we, the year that he was world number one. And Brooks had to miss the 2018 renewal when he went on to win 2 more majors that year, coming off of wrist surgery. And I just wonder what would have happened that year. It's all ifs and buts, right? But he then comes in 2019. He's a leader after round one, leader after round two, 3 strokes back going into the weekend, going into the Sunday, because, again, Molinari played so well. And he closes that gap. And, you know, we talked about Xander Schauffele having a really good chance on that day. Brooks Koepka did as well. It purely just come down to, you know, Woods just had his nose in front after birdie in the 15th. Schauffele and Koepka were both at 12 under going into the 17th. Dustin Johnson had finished at 12 under. And it just so happened to be that Tiger managed to keep himself out in front with a birdie on 16. And, you know, it was brilliant. And I think a lot gets missed in that year because of how exciting it was that Tiger won, right? Like I think for the most part, Tony Finau was excellent that week, even happened to play with Tiger. Francesco Molinari has obviously basically ruined, not ruined his career, but it's almost ended his career with that loss. And look, there was both Finau and Webb Simpson, didn't they? Shot 64s on that Saturday. Molinari shot 66. Like it was a scoring day for sure. Patrick Cantlay shot 64 as well, so it was one of those weird ones where people could vault themselves in contention on the Saturday. But I just think a lot gets kind of lost on that week based on what happened with Tiger, and I think Brooks is one of the sort of victims of that. And you just look at, he was 33rd on debut in 2015, wasn't really at this level at that point. 21st in 2016, again, you know, pretty average. 2017, he starts getting better every round, finishes 11th. As I said, 2018, he has to skip. 2019, finishes 2nd, comes back a year later, finishes 7th, although he was never really there, with DJ just pulling away. And then last year, you know, he's tied for lead after round 1, 2 ahead after rounds 2 and 3, and chucks it away. And look, there's no getting away from the fact he chucked it away last year, despite Rahm's brilliance, Brad. But like, what made me so keen on him was just like, he was just at the end of that thing, he was like, I know the mistake I made. It's never going to happen again. And he goes and wins the next major. And it's that bullishness that I think he's just so convinced that he'll win the Masters one day, that despite the fact that he's having putting changes, despite the fact that he's not played very well. But the one caveat, and I think it's interesting that we both kind of got picks at the top of the market where we're slightly worried about one caveat. Xander may be, you know, questionable about winning equity, and here with the fact that when he contended last year and should have won, he'd won the week before on Liv, and when he won the PGA Championship, he'd finished 5th the week before on Liv. So this argument that I'm trying to make that maybe Liv doesn't really matter, and you know, he would have just checked out. The suggestion last year was that he had to play well leading into those. So that's my one concern. But at 18-1, I think I just believe so much in him in a major, and I don't want to pick on Rory McIlroy, but he's 8 points bigger than him, and I just, you know, or you can get 20, you still get 20-1 actually on Brooks now, 7 places with spread X. Like, he's double the price of Rory McIlroy. They're just worlds apart in terms of major performers now. So Brooks is what Rory was back in, you know, 2011, 2012 or whatever, and the roles are reversed. He's the best modern day major player. So I'm going to give him one more roll of the dice. If he doesn't perform well after this one, and it's based on the fact that he struggled and lived the week before, then you have to then keep an eye on how well he plays and lives for a major thing. Soon find out.
I honestly, like, I can't get on board with taking Koepka at that price personally. But at the same time, I do think if anyone can overcome, like, the 277s, you know, I mean, who knows what he was going through his head. He was experimenting different clubs, and like, he might have just, like, given up and just, oh, I don't give a fuck anymore, you know. It's all that matters is next week, you know, he's missed the majors. And I just feel like if anyone can overcome it, and of course he's gonna no doubt have that on his mind last year, but he's the type of player that if he can overcome that, whereas others would melt.
He'll use it as fuel, won't he? Like, whereas you said, maybe,
well, this is it. Yeah, that's the best way to put it. He will use it as fuel, and yeah, he's got the pedigree for majors, hasn't he? So I can't argue against it. I can't be on board myself. Like, I just feel like he needs to be a bit bigger based on everything. Well, obviously he is drifting. I think he should be 25 to 1 personally. Yeah.
Like, I think you'll be able to get 25 to 1. I mean, I think you can get 25 to 1 on the exchange now. And I think that is probably what I would say. I would say go and bet it on the exchange, because I'm not playing him for each way value. I'm playing, he's 27 to 1 on the exchange. So go and play him on the exchange, knowing that I'm only backing him win only, because that's all I really care about, to win equity. Next pick for me, and this is the direct correlation that we made with Xander Schauffele. I said that I think Xander's a safer each way play, and I think Hideki Matsuyama's the better of the two in terms of win equity. He's 20-1 with 7 places, 18-1 8 places, 16-1 10 places. Do what you like. I do want the each way value baked into it. But I think, Brad, in terms of players that have actually shown something on the PGA Tour that I can get behind this season, it's Scheffler, Wyndham Clark, Xander Schauffele, as you mentioned, and then Hideki, who, you know, ideally on a Riviera where, you know, 10 or so players have crossed over between the two, right? So ball striking was good again last week. As you said to me off air, like, the sort of lit down in terms of not placing last week is disappointing, but it's so hard to get away from the fact these last 4 PGA Tour starts, 1st, 13th, 2nd and 3rd in strokes gained tee to green, 18th, 13th, 6th, 15th. And what's really interesting is around the green game is just perfect for this. And I think that's why he's had so much success here. And as I sort of said at the start of the show, like, I really put a lot into how well players have performed after winning here. Like, Dustin Johnson played here, missed the cut. Danny Willett won here, missed the cut. And like, Bubba Watson famously struggled in between the two wins. Sergio missed the cut 3 times after winning here. Like, it's such a hard thing to do. And Matsuyama has gone 14th and 16th. And actually, when he was 14th, a couple of years ago, he was 2nd going into the weekend. I just think he's so good. And then even last year, 5th going into Sunday. He's just so good around his golf course. It's almost tailor-made for him. The one thing you would hope is that he had slightly more length, would be...
That is the one thing you'd want, wouldn't it?
The one caveat is that you'd want a bit of length. And when he was 2nd at the halfway mark behind Scheffler, 2 years ago, he was a distant 2nd, so it's not like he was right in contention. But
his putting looks a little bit off a bit as well, doesn't it, at the moment? That's the only other thing I would say, like, distance and putting. You don't worry about putting around here, though, do you?
No, not because I don't think you need to putt well here, because you obviously do. But I think how you putt anywhere else throughout the year is irrelevant to how you're going to putt this week. Like, you just need to be good at putting at Augusta, and Hideki has been when he needed.
Exactly. So, yeah.
I just think in terms of, you know, rock solid claims, he's the one. You know, people will look at Spieth at similar prices because he's obviously won here, completely understandable, played well last week. Mm-hmm. Well, people will like looking at Aberg and Wyndham Clark because, you know, they're the most exciting debutants. Joaquin Niemann's won so many times on Live. But he just makes better claims than all of them, I think. And you know, the only one I couldn't really say maybe he made better claims at was maybe Brooks and Xander, and we've gone with those two already. So the process there.
No, he was the one for me that I feel like if he was to win, it would really hurt because I sung his praises last week. And I also feel as though it was such a tough decision. Once I got over the idea of not backing Rory, then I was like, right, it's between Xander and Hideki. Like, they're both so informed, both hit the course so well. And I just gave Xander the edge in the end. I did. And there weren't much in it. And yeah, it would hurt. It would hurt, but I couldn't have them both on the card because there's a few in the middle pack that I quite like. So yeah, yeah. I had to say no to Decky, but I agree with everything you just said. He's a great bet this week.
So this player that you're picking next, I looked at him quite long and hard because his form is just dramatically improved after what is seemingly a ridiculous mistake to make. And his obvious course form there. But talk us into your thought process behind Matt Fitzpatrick.
Mm-hmm. I've always liked Fitzpatrick for Augusta, especially like now he's added a bit more distance to his game. But the main thing I like is that he has the brain, you know, the course management, like the strategic knack that we were all saying earlier, that is required around Augusta. You know, he doesn't exactly jump off the page when looking at course form, but he has only missed the cut once from 9 starts, which came on his debut, which is understandable. Didn't you say earlier about 9 starts, the magic 10?
Yeah.
There's something there as well. But yeah, his best finish came on his second start. He finished 7th in 2016. And it hasn't been until the last couple of years where he started to play a bit better at Augusta again. He was 14th in 2022, 10th last year. And again, like, those results are likely linked to him adding a bit more distance. He's a major winner now, which, you know, makes him a lot more appealing. It will give him that self-belief that he can win another one. I wasn't actually that full sold on taking him this week. I just saw that final round in Texas and his approach play wasn't that great, which was obviously the main thing that put me off. It hasn't been good for a while, but that final round, he shot 5 under at the Texas Open to finish tied 10th, and he gained over 3 strokes on approach, which was the 3rd best in the field. It's considerably better than the previous 3 rounds, and it was just enough of a nudge to suggest he's found something with his irons in that final round. And yeah, as you said, his form is drastically improved. I mean, worth mentioning, he was 5th at the Players as well. He could just be finding form at the right time. And I do like his game for Augusta. So yeah, that's why I've gone on him this way. I think 41 is a nice price for him. 8 places, yeah. It's good.
I wonder if Matt Fitzpatrick takes it as a slight. If you Google the name Fitzpatrick, just Fitzpatrick, then the 2 people that come up are Ryan Fitzpatrick, who's a quarterback, which I understand, and Noel Fitzpatrick, an Irish veterinary surgeon, comes up right before Matt Fitzpatrick is right down the bottom of that list. Now, I don't think he cares, but the thing I would say about Fitzpatrick is I would have thought that if you were basing it on his 7th in 2016, I would say don't really care. Like, he shot a 67 or whatever it was out of contention in a year, and he climbed places because people were making mistakes, right? But it's the importance of the 14th and the 10th the last 2 years when he's added that distance. Like, there is a direct correlation between his success in majors and him adding that length. He finished 14th, 5th and 1st in the first 3 majors of 2022, and then 10th and 17th in 2 of them last year. And I think that's I think that's the point for me. There's been a tipping point in his career. He said for ages that there was no need for him to add distance. If he wanted to add distance, he could just go and do it at any point, and then he might win, like Bryson, sort of criticising him, and then you think, why don't you do it? And he does, and he wins, right? The stars aligned for him, there's no doubt, at Brookline. Like, it's a perfect golf course for him. But fifth at the PGA in 2022, 10th at the Masters last year, you know, second top 10 in, you know, whatever it was, 9-10 starts. Misses a cut. Was he an amateur, I think, probably in 2014 as well? So
yeah, I think he was.
You know, not going to worry too much about that. It looks like you're going to get a weekend out of Matt Fitzpatrick based on, you know, previous years, based on his current form. And look, I think players do just take a while to warm up to the golf course. It's as simple as that. I think, you know, on average, it's kind of 5 starts before you win the Masters. I think it'll be quite defining over the next few years how Fitzpatrick does in majors in general. Like, is it going to be he's 1-1 and that's a career best, like a Gary Woodland or a Lucas Glover or whatever? Or is he going to go and be someone that's chasing 2 or 3, 4 majors? And I think it's the latter. I think he's good enough to do
that. I think he's got it in him, yeah. I think he's got it in him.
I think he's just got so much dedication. I mean, everyone's watched
football. That's it, yeah. Dedication to the craft. Yeah. I think he loves it.
And you know, the he's got a weird around the green game approach, hasn't he, with his weird cross-handed chipping and stuff.
Oh, like yeah, that's weird.
He's got the intangibles. He's got the kind of strategicness. I feel like if he went and practiced with Rory might pick up a thing of where to sort of hit the ball. Trust me, that'd be a really good
player. He'd be the type not to give anything away.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. You won't talk to him about it, but he could follow him, couldn't he? That would be the main
thing. Yeah, yeah.
But there we go. On to another player that I think is just figuring out Augusta at the right time. Shane Lowry is 40, he is 50-1 8 places on live score. He's 40-1 8 places in general. But interestingly, I don't hate the idea of going 70-1 with 3 places on Bet365 and just taking a chance that he can really eclipse his kind of, you know, previous best here. And he's just improved so much at this golf course. He mentions that it was when he played with Tiger Woods in whatever year it was that really kick-started him. When I looked into it deeper, he basically just said Tiger Woods made a 10 on the 12th hole and still carried on. And he took a bit of, you know, took a bit of guide from that, you know, patience is a virtue and all this sort of thing. But regardless of how he's got there, he's just suddenly really improved at this golf course. And 4 straight top 25s here. When he was 25th 4 years ago, he shot middle rounds of 69 and 68. That was obviously in the 2020 Masters, where you wouldn't necessarily think he's going to do so well. He has 3 rounds of par or better the following year, finishes 21st. And then it's when he's 3rd 2 years ago, you think, okay, Lowry can actually win here. You know, he was in second place, wasn't he, over the first 36 holes. I think Cam Smith, or, you know, him and Cam Smith were sort of exchanging the lead at one point, weren't they? And then obviously Scottie Scheffler was kind of out in front of them. And then last year he finished his 16th again, opened up the 68 and the 72. And what Lowry seems to be able to do now is he seems to be able to get himself in the mix and start off, you know, the right way to kind of set up a weekend. And whether he can take advantage of it is, you know, remains to be seen. I seem to remember last year he played really well but couldn't hole anything. And I think that's just so important. And when you look at Shane Lowry's career, it's unbelievable, actually, how well he's done in majors. I know he's obviously the highlight is the win in the Open Championship in Ireland in 2019. But 3rd here in 2022, 4th in the PGA Championship in 2021, which you wouldn't necessarily equate to success for him, and 2nd in the US Open in 2016.
Mm-hmm.
We know what happened in 2016. At Oakmont, he chucked away, I think it was a 6-shot lead, right? There's no getting away from that. But I just think he's such a ridiculous talent. And I know that I come on here and people listen to this going, Tom, you always give him shit. And I do. There's no simple, you know, there's no getting away from that. He just has it in majors to, I think, outperform his price, 50-1, 40-1, whatever it is, considering what he's done in his career. And I talked about there, he might have been exchanging lead in round 2 a couple of years ago. He probably wasn't. He finished 5 shots behind Scottie Scheffler after 2 rounds in 2022. But he's been there, right? And he's been in the mix. He's got that kind of guile. And I actually think this is the best he's ever prepared for Augusta. So you look at his previous years. 2019, he'd actually won the DP World Tour at the start of the season. So you'd go, okay, well, he'd won that year. That's probably his best preparation. He didn't play that well. And I'd go, well, okay, no, he didn't. But when you look at the four starts coming into it, he'd missed three of his last four cuts. And the one that wasn't a missed cut was a 62nd place finish in a WGC that had a 71-man field. So he'd completely lost form after that win earlier in the year. He'd also never played the course well up to that point, or, you know, at least as well as he had done the last couple of years. So he's now got his perfect blend of playing well. He's been inside the top 10, Brad, after six of his last eight rounds at Augusta. Mm-hmm. And he was the 54-hole leader at the Cognizant Classic and at the Arnold Palmer Invitational. Yes, we know he didn't get over the line. That's the big dig at Shane Lowry. It's the same that you get at Xander Schauffele. It's the same.
Yeah, exactly. Not too different.
We know he can win at this level. He has won at this level. The same as Xander Schauffele. They've both won on the PGA Tour. They've both won big events. Even his 19th at the Players, I think, is pretty encouraging. You know, flying around 66 there. One would look at it and go, his form's going the wrong way. And I think that's, you know, completely fair. It's a true statement. But I just think he's preparing perfectly for it. I think he's right in the mix. He's 50-1, you know, in a place, eight places. He's 40-1, eight places general. I would advocate for picking him at both of those odds. And I do think it's worth playing 70-1, three places on Bet365, because I do think he can actually win this tournament. So Shane Lowry next for me.
Love that. Hell of a case you made. And I can't argue any of it. It's just been so good. Like, his irons has been lights out. And as you said, I don't think he has been in this good a form coming into a Masters before, which, yeah, certainly eye-catching, given previous year at the past.
I think that's the biggest thing. Like, I had a sort of suspicion that was the case, but then when I looked, because I've never really looked into that in the past, because I've never thought to sort of play him, so I've never thought, you know, and it's probably because he's never been in that good a form coming in, right? Like, there must be a reason I've never been interested in him in the past, and this was it. So, you know, you add in the, you know, the obvious uptick in course form, and I'm really excited about him.
Like,
talking of players that can't win, Brad, I've got another excellent case here for a 50-1.
I thought you were going to lead on to my pick there.
No.
We'll answer that later.
That's plenty big enough to you know, not worry about it. But
yeah.
Cameron Young, never won on the PGA Tour, is obviously problematic. I think it's unfair to levy the same abuse at him as you would another player that's never won. I think when you look at the chances he's had to win, they're not as clear cut as people suggest. The one was the Dubai Desert Classic, where he looked terrible in the final round when he was, you know, leading after rounds 1-3. And even just winning at that level, I mean, he's won on the Korn Ferry Tour, but he's not won above that. I would be slightly concerned about how he performed in the final round there. But I just think, Brad, at some point, as I said, she was Anna Schauffele, I think, in a slightly different respect, but, like, I think talent's going to take over eventually. I think it's probably going to happen this season. He's still only 26 years of age, despite the fact he looks 36. You look at his last eight major starts, he's got four top eight finishes. He's had a chance to win the PGA in 2022. He's had a chance to win the Open Championship in 2022. And then he comes here and he finishes seventh on his second start. And bear in mind how badly his debut went. When I think people probably quite liked him at the time, opened 77-77. He then comes back the following year, kicks off with a round of 67, fourth after round one, closes with a 68. He's gone 67, 72, 75, 68 last year. It's really only the 75 that's completely taken him out of contention, although, you know, the others were kind of pulling away before that. Mm-hmm. I just think he's got the perfect game for the golf course, which is very easy to level at Cam Young, because we think he's got the perfect game for almost every golf course in the modern era, right? But he's been so consistent with his irons, been so consistent tee to green. He's, you know, had top 10 approach weeks in four of his last eight starts. I just believe in his talent long term. I think, and a good look, I was amongst it. I'm not denying it. I think the group that are sort of calling him a sort of loser and not capable of winning,
it's going too far now. It's going too far. I would always have been in that camp before. I now think it's totaling over too much. At the end of the day, we've got a guy here that's had four top eight finishes already this season. He's had a couple of chances to win. I think Peter Malnati beat him as opposed to him throwing it away. You know, he shot two rounds of 68 in the final two rounds when he was in contention. So I don't think you can be asked to do much more than that at the Valspar. Do I want him to be going down the final five holes with a lead with Brooks Koepka or Xander or Shane Lowry or Hideki? Probably not. But I'd take it. I'd take being in the position. And I think he can get himself in that position. That's the main thing. Like, I think people will look at, you know, rightly would look at someone like a Thigala who's had four top eight or top 10 finishes here as someone that can come win it on their, you know, second or third start. I think the Cam Young camp is clearer. And I like it at 50 to 1, seven places. So he is my next pick.
I really like it. I also got big on Young as well this week. I could do like his chances. And tell you what you said was so important. You said he's only 26, right? And people need to get off his back. What is this? His third year on tour. And what he's already achieved is incredible, really. He's had runner up, as you already said, the Open, third at the USPGA. He's just seventh on Masters, another top 10 at the Open. I mean, it's just what he's already achieved in the majors is just incredible. And he is a major player. And he's going to gain loads of strokes off the tee this week, and his irons look good. So, yeah, it's not really at the price. I don't think you can really turn your nose up at Cameron Young this week.
And I think, look, it's so obvious. It's so obvious to think, like, OK, he did it when he was coming off the pace at St. Andrews, and, you know, it didn't really matter too much. And he was miles behind Brian Harman when he was second going into the final round at the Open. But I just believe he's just going to be in the mix in some way, shape or form come Sunday. And that's all you can ask from someone at 50 to 1. And if he was 33 to 1, which I think he was at one point, and you know, 25 to 1 like he is in a regular tournament, I don't need to worry about it. But he was one shot shy of winning at St. Andrews. He was only a couple of shots shy of winning the PGA. It might even have been one again, right? He's just been in the mix on multiple occasions. He knows what it takes to just stay in the mix. Do we know that he knows how to get it done? No, because he's not done it. But that's the beauty of someone having a career.
I also think that, I know we say this quite a bit, but he's the greatest case of once he gets one win, I do think it's going to be like buses that will come at once. You know, I think he's just going to get a bundle and really show his potential.
It's very clearly a mental obstacle, right? Like it's Tony Finau, and Tony Finau has a major. Like he is Tony Finau. He struggles to get the first one. He'll get the first one, and then he'll struggle probably maybe to get another couple, and then he'll get three or four in a season. And then he'll have a chance to win a major. I mean, Tony Finau's got a great, you know, case to be made here. I think the difference is that Tony Finau's 35 to 1 and Cam Young's 50. And I think that's what kind of, like, because Tony Finau's case at Augusta is his course form, right? And, you know, how good he was when he, broke his ankle, basically, and then finished 10th. He finishes fifth and was second going into the thing. But there's no way that I can look at Tony Finau, who's got three top 10s here in six starts, right, and not think that Cam Young can't achieve a similar feat. For him to add another couple of top 10s in his next four starts really sort of makes sense to me. So, perfect profile for him. So I like Cam Young. Final one for me. I am tempted to look a little bit longer, and maybe we'll come into some that I've been looking at. But the final one I've definitely landed on is Patrick Reed. And he is 66 to 1 with eight places. Mm-hmm. Starting to sort of gather some momentum and a bit of popularity. And for good reason, right? Like he was terrible to start the year on LIV. There's no getting away from that. 17th, 39th, 37th, 29th. But then he's the type of player that will go and find a way to get himself into form. And that is what he did at the International Series in Macau. Yes, we can talk about the level of playing field. Absolutely fine. Completely agree.
But he shot 65, 64 and 63 in that tournament, which makes me think you can't do that unless you're playing good golf, right? Then he goes to Live Golf Miami and he's inside the top 10 after each of the rounds. So he finishes ninth. Just playing at the right time. And he is a player that has got better here. So he was shit at Augusta before he won. Like,
yeah, he was. Yeah.
Like, that is not... That goes against everything, basically, that everyone suggests. Everyone suggests you've got to have played well there before. You've got to have had a top 10 or a top 5. You've got to have broken 70. You've got to have made the cut the year before. He broke all of those trends. He was missed cut 22nd, 49th missed cut in his four starts at Augusta before that. His best round, I think, was 70 going into that week. And then he just peaks, right? Just peaks. He you know, does what he needs to do. Opens 69, 66, puts himself in front. 67 on the Saturday. I think he has two or three shot lead right over Rory, and then just finishes the job of, you know, an under par round. And what I find so fascinating, he would have been probably the least popular person in the Champions Dinner. Finishes 36th that year, probably hated hosting it. I don't think that's, you know, in his wheelhouse at all, hosting and being friendly with people. Since then, 10th, 8th, 35th and 4th. Obviously the 4th come last year in his first visit here since he's been on Live. Did he just sort of backdoor the 4th? Yes, he sort of grew into it, 26th, 16th, 9th and 4th. Just steady as opposed to really putting himself out in front. But he's just got everything, Brad. He's just got everything for me that kind of I want from a not just a Masters contender, but a major player in general. He is the one that's going to take everything as a slight. He is going to use it as fuel. He is a sort of B-tech Brooks Koepka, I guess.
100%, yeah. He's got the guts, hasn't he? He's got the guts. No, he just doesn't give a shit. He'll just show up and do his thing. And he loves his course. Absolutely loves Augusta.
And the thing is, Brad, like the one, again, that I sort of said it, you know, earlier, is that you'd like him to have a bit more length with Patrick Reed. He's the sort of player that's just overcome that. He's overcome that in all the sorts of tournaments. He's done it at the WGC.
He'll gain strokes elsewhere, won't he?
Yeah, like he'll gain them around the green. He, you know, longer hitters generally do well at tournament champions. He won that. They do well here. He's won that. He's won at Riviera. He's won, sorry, not Riviera, but he's won in other tournaments like that. That caliber, and then he won at Torrey Pines last time out, where again they think longer players are going to prosper, and he won by 5 strokes, right? And we all know what happened that week. We all know what people will say about it, but I don't really care. Like, you look at him, he's made 16 of his last 17 major cuts. He's had 4 top 10s in that time, and 3 of them have been at the Masters. Whatever, he's gone from really struggling to a core specialist, a little bit like Shane Lowry, and that's And his profile is actually what makes me believe Lowry can do it. So it's ironic that I'm kind of picking both players, but they've almost got this kind of very similar kind of pattern, right? Where like Reed's come in and finishing miscut 29th, 49th miscut and then wins. Shane Lowry goes miscut 39th, miscut 25th, 21st, 3rd. And then you think, okay, well, maybe he just goes and does what Reed did. You know, it's a similar type of player. Will excel with their kind of short game and imagination around the greens, as opposed to, you know, striping it off every tee and you know, doing that. So the difference with Lowry is we know how well he's hitting the ball with his approaches, and Reed, we haven't got quite the certainty on that. But that's where I am. Like, that's where I am with Masters picks at the moment. I have got a, and this is just for disclosure purposes, I had an early bet on Sam Burns earlier in the year. It's not one I'm going to put up as a tip now, but when I looked in the middle of February, Brad, I was looking for like who seems like a bit of an outlier in the market in terms of form, and this was when Burns finished 6th, 10th, 3rd and 10th in 4 starts. And actually, when you look at what he did here last year, he was 6th after the first and second round, so he's kind of shown it. And look, the argument would be he's never done it in a major, he's, you know, not that big of a price, he's still only sort of 66 to 1 now, so I wouldn't necessarily pick him, but you know, I'm still
glad I've got the bet in some respects, even if I thought about throwing it in the bin a couple of weeks ago.
I had a few mates approach me a few months ago and say, oh, who's your pick for the Masters? And I hadn't placed any bets, didn't plan to. But I just thought on value, Tagala was my pick at the time. He was 80 to 1, and I did have a little bet on him just because my mates were as well. I didn't want to miss out. And I haven't backed him. Like, I haven't put him up this week as a selection just because his price is almost half what it has halved. But still, I think that was a good bet back then. And look, he did so well on his debut. It's going to be hard to replicate, but he does fit the bill. Does fit the bill, and he has been playing well in patches. He could show up again, but I don't think I put him up at 40s or 50s. You know, I think I liked him more of like a 66, 80 to one shot. But you can't have him as that.
No,
I think that the case for Russell Henley and Corey Connors over Patrick Reed in this price range is very similar to the argument of Xander Schauffele over Hideki right at the top of the market.
I think
well and truly well versed to place. Whereas I just think on a Sunday, if all three of them are in contention, I trust Reed the most, and I'm going for a bit of win equity. I do think Russell Henley makes absolutely perfect sense. Anyone
that does,
they're going to bet him at 66 to 1, 8 places, or even, you know, shorter to get 10 places at 50, I think he's absolutely right to do so. I haven't put him up, but I do get it. Corey Connors, a sort of prospect, I don't think he's quite playing as well as Henley is, but do understand. The other one, Brad, that I considered in this range, Jason Day. Do you remember you put him up at Riviera?
Yes.
And wasn't that off the... Hadn't he played well there the year before for the first time?
Yeah,
I think he finished sort of like, I can't remember if he'd finished the year before, but he finished ninth this year and he was second after round one and two, right? And he had a good chance to win before going into the weekend. And I just wonder if that change in his game that's led to him being able to play Riviera well, because we know how well that correlates, may just be the extra sort of like boost he needs here. I mean, look, he nearly won it in 2011 off the back of Rory's collapse. He finished second. He finished third in 2013. Where he's the 36th hole leader. He finished 10th in 2016, where he was 5th going into the final round. He was 5th in 2019. Again, I think he was the 36th hole leader. So he's really been in the mix, you know, more often than he hasn't here. And even last year, Brad, he finished 39th, but he shot 80 on Sunday.
Off to a good start.
Yeah, 4th after round 1, 6th after round 2, 9th going into the final round. I think Jason Day's got a really good case to be made.
He's gone off the board a bit, hasn't he?
Yeah, that's why I haven't pulled the trigger. Like, he's gone 35th and missed cut his last three starts. That's what concerns me. But there's still, again, even then, there's a little bit of life. You know, Bay Hill's a tough golf course, one that he shouldn't consider. He likes it. But then he's sixth after round one of the players, 14th going into the weekend, could have been a better week. Don't necessarily care too much what he did at Houston, right? So...
I think the worrying thing is that he's relying on his short game the last few starts massively. Yeah. Like, his irons have really been poor. So that's the main concern. But yeah, that's when you referenced in his form at Augusta. I think that was also at the time, like, when it was like, why hasn't he performed well at Riviera? Because obviously they correlate so well. Yeah. When he's at his best, I think it's a good, well, great course for him.
He's definitely the type of player that if he was passing the eye test on round one, we thought, he's going at a couple of pins here, and he's
looking good. Yeah, you just jump on.
Yeah, I think that's probably the way to do so. Before you come into your final pick, Brad, because this is a bomb and one that we'd like to hear on the
big bomb, show. Yeah.
A couple of players that I thought were interesting. I think I've been talking about him for a few weeks now and never really benefit from it or anything really, but Nick Taylor, I think, is just an improving player, and I think that the odds versus how he's played this season seem a little bit out of whack, but that's basically it. He's played well on one start here, but it was in November, so it's hard to know. You would think actually he'd probably benefit from the move, but not quite sure. I think Adam Hadwin could sort of top 10, top 20.
Yeah, I considered him.
He's got a decent record here, all being said. I mean, he was 36th in 2017, he was 24th a year later, where he was 4th after round one, and he missed the cut in 2020 renewal, which is not a massive surprise.
You know,
I was going to say the one for me in that range was Olesen.
Yeah,
quite close to.
Yeah, like people might see a bet of mine that leans towards Olesen later in the week. So I won't spoil that for anyone. But he is someone I think can play well without winning or contending. Mm. And it's basically the reason I didn't get to someone like a Hadwin or a Taylor is because you look at Olesen and go, well, not only is he make the same sort of cases, but he's actually done it. Like he was sixth.
Sixth in Davey, yeah.
You talk about how crucial that first round is, Brad. He was 78th after round. He shot a 78 in round one on his debut. He was 82nd. After round one, and then shot 70, 68, 68 to finish sixth.
Unbelievable comeback.
Probably the best, got to be one of the best comebacks at the Augusta ever, statistically. Didn't do great the following year, 44th, but then there was a massive gap 4 years, and he finished 21st, where he was basically inside the top 25 all week. He was 14th going into Sunday. So I think he's a brilliant bet for some of those placement markets, which, again, you'll see it.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to get onto that later in the week. That's why I didn't want to say too much. I think we're both going to be targeting him by the sounds of it, which I had no idea. But, yeah, I mean, there's a couple. I mean, continental, top Danish. I think all he has to do is beat Nikolai. But, yeah, we'll go into more detail later. But I think I've got to have him on side in some shape or form this week, because even a top placement bet, you know, some description, it's just staring me in the face. It's too obvious, isn't it? It's like he's got the game, he's great for majors, he'll just grind, he'll find a way to score. And he was third for around the greens last week, 12th tee to green. We've got to have some Olesen action.
Wait, one player that's basically, he's only played two majors. He's a winner this season. Austin Eckroat shot a final round 65, didn't he, to finish 10th in his second US Open start. He's played another major. He's a massive price in terms of the fact that he's won this season.
He is.
You know, a better player, and it was good to see him. He's kind of plodded along, really, hasn't he, since his win. But he's not kind of like abandoned his game. Like, he was 17th going into the weekend at Bay Hill. He was 17th going into Sunday at the Players. He was 33rd last week, where he was 4th after round 1, 18th after round 2. So I think Eckroat is one of those players that, again, maybe we'll come on to.
Definitely. Wednesday. Yeah. He's just been so good with his irons, hasn't he? Which is obviously so important here. And, yeah, that major performance is massive. That's real eye-catching. So, yeah, he's definitely someone to consider.
Bubba Watson was getting a lot of steam, wasn't he, after he started okay in Doral last week, and he's now 275 to 112 places because he just shit the bed after one round and went back to Bubba Watson.
Tell you someone who's interested is Adam Schenk, who's actually longer off the tee than I anticipated. I thought he wasn't the long, but he's above average, and he's come into a bit of form. And I actually don't. This is not for him to, like, this is obviously his first time playing here. But I actually think he's an interesting one. He's at massive odds. So whether another one for when we bring up on Wednesday, when we go over the specials. But he's someone that's catching my eye a little bit. I think he could potentially enjoy this test. He's someone that I might explore as well in other markets.
Well, there we go. We've given you a little preview, haven't we, of what's to come.
No, we should just do it in one. I'm itching to go. I'm frothing at the bit. I haven't even given you my last selection yet.
No. Let's give me the final selection at Augusta.
Let's get into the bomb. Right, so I'm going with Gary Woodland.
Yeah.
He's 250 to 1, 10 places. And, yeah, it's not often a long shot appeals to me as much as this one does for the Masters. I'm a bit excited. He looks brilliant value for this week. And yeah, okay, maybe excitement is a bit of an over-exaggerator. And we don't often see a long shot win, but I just feel like he's obviously been out for 6 months last year. He discovered that he had to have brain surgery to remove a lesion. And I watched the road back for Gary Woodland on ESPN yesterday, and it was a really good watch. If you haven't seen it, I couldn't recommend it more. Anyway, he just goes through all the struggles and his recovery. It's truly inspiring. Anyway, besides the point, I've always had a soft spot for Gary, and I backed him for his US Open win. And obviously the amount he does for charity and for people in need, he's an easy guy for root for. But yeah, since his return, he has struggled, which, you know, is to be expected, right? He's coming back from a really big surgery, like life-threatening. And he has missed 5 cuts from 8 events. Mm. But last time out at the Houston Open, he certainly found something. He was 12th in ball striking, 2nd in driving distance, 2nd tee to green, 1st on approach. And he closed with a round of 66 and finished tied 21st. And the hope is that he can carry that level of ball striking into this week. His putting has been terrible, but that's always been his Achilles heel. And as we've been mentioning, like, we see a lot of team no putts, you know, show up at Augusta. We see all the time over the years. The greens are so tough to read. Most of the players are struggling. Interestingly, though, he has had some decent putting weeks at Augusta. His 5th for strokes gained putting in 2021. He was 19th last year, strokes game putting, on his way to a 14th place finish. And yes, like, surprisingly, that is his best finish from 11 appearances at Augusta. Like, he's been pretty terrible before that. And yeah, so as we've been saying, like, sometimes it takes players longer to work out what's required to play well at Augusta. And it might be that he's just finally cracked it. And I mean, he's been a good major player over the years. Obviously, I've said that he's won the US Open back in 2019, but he's had 3 further top tens, and that's all come in the last 6 years. As I've already said, like, it's probably asking a bit much for him to win. But again, like, he's no stranger to winning a major. So if he was up there, he's got that, you know, in the back of his mind. Like, I've done it before. Well, he hasn't done a Masters, but he's won a major before, and that's something a lot of players in the field don't have. So yeah, I more likely playing for places, and the each way value at 250-1 with 10 places just looks massive to me. But I also think, you know what, if he gets himself up there, he could do something magical. We'll see.
It would be some story, wouldn't it? I think, look, in terms of what you've already said it, like, in terms of him winning, it's probably too soon, right? One, it's probably unlikely that Gary Woodland, you know, would be the first person to come to mind when you think of a Masters winner anyway. But coming back from what he's come back from, you're almost just delighted that he can tee up here and play so well. Do you know who he reminds me of at Augusta? It's Henrik Stenson. Henrik Stenson was, you know, average to poor at Augusta throughout his career. Best of 14th going into 2018, and he suddenly just finished 5th. And I remember that year, just like everyone sort of saying, like, we don't know where this has been with Gary Woodland. He should have done this, you know, with Henrik Stenson, sorry, he should have done this, you know, in years gone by. And I think that's the same with Woodland. Like, everything suggests that Woodland should be good at Augusta. And when something is like that, it can just happen. Like, it might just be that, you know, he goes into it thinking, yeah, I should be good at Augusta, and I don't know why I haven't been. If you're thinking it, he might be thinking it, and that might just add the little bit of pressure. And maybe, like, once the pressure's off, once you've won a major elsewhere, you can potentially come and do it. I mean, he's not someone that has, you know, perennially played well at Riviera, but he's got a top 10 there a couple of years ago as well. So, well, it might have been last year, right? So, I get it. I completely get it. He's 500-1 when I was looking. I was doing the sleepers and value picks article, odds checker earlier. And when he was 500-1, I thought, you know, it's one that you sort of eye catch in, and you put it into an article, and you want people to pick up on it and build a little bit of steam around a big pick. But I was going to have to decide that, you know, when they're win only over there, there's probably no value in even 500-1. But, you know, yeah, I completely get the process behind it. It makes perfect sense.
I mean, you're asking, I mean, it's, as we said, like, if it's so tough for a long shot, I mean, they're this price for a reason, to a certain degree. But I think if you're looking to take a long shot, I think it's best to take someone who has got the credentials to win a major, and this guy has proven it in the past, right? So I think, yeah, that's it.
The thing is, the longest winner you kind of get is like Danny Willett, who went off for like 66-1, who was the world number 12 at the time. Do you know what I mean? Like that's the thing with the Masters, is like you don't really get long shots, which is why
What class was Todd Hamilton?
When he won the Open, but I just mean in the Masters.
The Masters. You're just referring to Masters, right?
Yeah.
The Masters, we haven't had it.
Hideki at 45-1. I think Bubba might have been 50.
Danny Willett the biggest?
Danny Willett the biggest in recent years. I don't know if he's the biggest but he certainly feels like the one where everyone went, cool, I don't know how Danny Willett's won the Masters. And even that needed some help, do you know what I mean? So that's always going to be the knock at someone 100's one bigger, is like it just doesn't happen. As you said, if you're going to pick one, then there you go. Charles Schwartz was 90-1.
There we go. Yeah.
So you do get them.
Trends are there to be broken, though.
Exactly that. You know, people will be backing Wyndham Clark and Ludvig Åberg despite trends, won't they? So, you know, maybe that's the brightest decision rather than going for, you know, 250-1 long shot who's coming off of brain surgery. But, you know, it's. There's cases to be made.
Bite your hand for a place, let's put it that
way. Exactly, you've made it. So there we go. I think that the sort of takeaway is that there's a lot of us that we can target on Wednesday. So we've got a big old preview for Wednesday's show. It'll be a shorter show. It'll probably be a 20-minute. I can't remember what we did last year, Brad, but it probably was only a 20.
We just went through the markets. It ended up being longer than we plan, because that's just how it goes. We end up going through all the markets. Yeah.
Looking forward to that. It gives us a couple of days. One for, I think, for the, you know, everyone to get the markets out. One for prices to settle. Two for us to just get over the fact that we're picking all the the outrights right first. So let's summarise our picks. And for once, Brad, I'll let you lead off.
Alrighty. I've gone with Xander Schauffele, 16-1. I think the best price is 16-1, 8 places with 888 Sport. Then I've gone for Matthew Fitzpatrick, 40-1, and you can take that with Betway, 8 places. And then Gary Woodland, 250-1, and you can take that with Paddy Power, 10 places, and Betfred, 10 places.
Yeah, so top pick for me, Brooks Koepka, 20-1, 7 places on SpreadX. I'm betting him with only. I'm betting him on the exchange. He's 27-1 on there at the moment. Obviously, about 26-1. But
that's a nice price.
That is how I'm going to approach it. That's probably how I'd advise everyone else approaches it. Hideki Matsuyama is 18-1 with 8 places, 20-1 with 7 generally. So that's probably the way to go. Again, I think if he's going to get himself in the mix, I'm pretty confident he'll be in the top 7 anyway. Shane Lowry, 50-1, 8 places with live score bet, 40-1, 8 places generally, where people might want to, you know, prefer to bet. And again, I think it's interesting to go 70-1, 3 places on Bet365, considering that's bigger than his sort of exchange price at the moment, which is 60. So interesting way to play him there. Cam Young, 50-1, 7 places. Just think it's about time that he kind of gets a win, and yes, it's a tough ask at a major. He's 45-1, 8 places if you want an extra place as well, which might pay off in itself. And then Patrick Reed, 66-1, 8 places. Two live players out of 5 for me, but for different reasons. I think Patrick Reed's got a lot of each way value. I think Brooks Koepka's, you know, obviously what Brooks Koepka is, right? It wouldn't matter where he's playing. So he could probably play on the Timbuktu tour and I'd probably bet him for a major. So it is what it is. Brad, enjoyed that. Went through the market.
Yep.
Looking forward to obviously looking at the specials later on in the week. Hopefully people come back and listen to that as well. I'm sure they will. Any last sort of thoughts before we sign off here?
No, just really excited to get this week, best week of the year, in my opinion.
If this is the one show that you listen to this week, me and Matt did an early one on Saturday. We've obviously done this one tonight, and we've got another one on Wednesday. If this is the one that you listen to, then good luck with your outright bets. Enjoy the Masters. It's certainly going to be an exciting one. It's certainly going to be, I think, in my opinion, potentially quite unpredictable based on what we've seen so far this season, and a lot to establish going into Thursday's opening round. So really looking forward to it. If anyone wants to leave us a nice review, we've had 3 or 4 new reviews actually recently for the show that me and Matt do. We asked for feedback on there and people delivered. So I'm doing the same with this show as well, Brad. It's always good for us to hear feedback for the two of us and what we can do better or what people enjoy. So go over there, do that for us on your kind of Apple Podcast, Spotify, whatever you want to put it on, and let us know what we can do better. Brad. Thank you very much as ever, and I will wish you well until Wednesday when we catch up again.